Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, December 8th, 2014. Scott Burton, your Monday host with you today. Amanda Compton will be on the show to highlight Tuesday night's mudrooms. We'll learn about the Alaska Bird Conference from Brenda Wright. Lauren Anderson will highlight activities at the Treadwell Arena. And we'll talk about the Governor's Open House on Tuesday night, plus Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music and more right here on a Juno Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. An Apache leader is fighting a plan by U.S. Arizona Senator John McCain and other lawmakers for what he says could jeopardize the way of life of his tribe. Matt Laszlo in Washington has the story.
A push by Arizona lawmakers to mine the state's Tonto National Forest for copper is drawing ire from Native Americans. Arizona Republican Senator John McCain has written a plan to mine the forest's oak flat. Terry Rambler is chairman of the San Carlos Apache and a descendant of original inhabitants of the public lands. He says the venture, called Resolution Copper, wouldn't reinforce the mile-deep hole it would dig, and the oak flat would quickly cave in.
And that area is what our elders call the rainmakers, because there's mountains in that area. Those mountains collect rain and snow, and it replenishes the water aquifers, and it goes down into the streams to all the neighboring communities, and that's what supplies the life that God gave to us, water.
The proposed mining venture is half-owned by the Rio Tinto Group, in which Iran has a financial stake. Should ongoing negotiations bring an end to economic sanctions the U.S. has against the Islamic Republic, and profits from mineral extraction go to Iran, Rambler says his concerns would be even more heightened. I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
An essay about eagles written by a freshman at the South Dakota School of Mines and Technology was recently published. Tristan Peacock's article is part of a series called Winged Warnings by Environmental Health News and National Geographic. The series describes environmental threats to birds and their role in keeping the planet healthy. Victoria Wicks reports.
In the defense of eagles, people came together. In respect of them, they remembered their values. In sight of them, they felt the pride of a nation. These three sentences, written by Tristan Peacock, express the heart of his article, Lakota Values Soar with the Eagles.
One of the things I really wanted to bring to the essay was not just the attention to the environment specifically, but also to the individual. You know, especially how a person handles themselves with this information, you know. When you know something, you have something of responsibility to act on it.
Peacock says he was raised on traditional values on the Cheyenne River Reservation. He first received an eagle plume when he was given his Lakota name. He received a feather as a sun dancer and another when he graduated from high school. He says these feathers are symbols intertwined with values that preserve not only an ecosystem, but also a race.
This is something that is significant to a culture, not just an animal that lives in an ecosystem. It's something that is meaningful to a culture. You wipe away that creature, you know, there's that little bit of that culture that's gone. So even sociologically, you know, to preserve all life that you can is to preserve the culture that's within society.
Near the end of his essay, Peacock writes, "The most defining situation a people can face is one that tests its dedication to a cause. With pollution and development overtaking the animal kingdom, it's time we put more effort into saving rather than destroying." For National Native News, I'm Victoria Wicks in Rapid City, South Dakota.
Billy Mills is commemorating the 50th anniversary of his Olympic gold medal win by giving out 50 grants. Here's Polly Dinetclaw with more.
Mills created the Dream Starter program because he believes that pursuing dreams can positively impact the youth of Indian country.
Some of our seventh generation people, the generation that is to heal us, have this tremendous mind, but they're lost in the poverty of dreams.
Mills says focusing on his dreams helped him get through some of the darkest times of his life. He hopes this grant can help young people overcome their struggles and to follow their dreams. The $10,000 grants will be given to 50 young Native Americans that want to give back to their communities. The awarding of the grants will happen over the next 5 years. For National Native News, I'm Polly Dinetclaw.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
The Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department welcomes to Albuquerque the Gathering of Nations to the UNM Pitt, April 24th. Information on services and the Gathering of Nations at ahcnm.org.
Supported by Sacred Wind Community Connect, providing scholarships and internet training to the Navajo Nation and Pueblo of Laguna in New Mexico. Sacred Wind believes broadband can reinforce Native cultures and offer means for self-determination. SacredWindCommunications.com. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, December 8th, 2014. It's about 6 minutes after the hour. Scott Burton with you here. And also with me now is Amanda Compton. How are you, Amanda?
Just wonderful. How are you?
Good, good. You're one of the founders of Mudrooms, which will be playing tomorrow night.
The event will be tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. This is correct.
At Northern Light United Church.
Northern Light United Church is our home now.
In the Federal Flats.
Yeah.
All right. A great storytelling event, and we're going to play a portion off the show here on this show tonight. Why don't you take us back? Tell us a little bit about the history.
Sure.
You're one of the founders. How did you start it?
It was a format developed already that I enlisted a couple of people to help me. Alita Bass and Lauren Brooks.
Was it Arctic Entries that maybe?
Arctic Entries is in Anchorage, right?
Okay.
And so I grew up in Anchorage, and I was living there after kind of college and ski bumming for a while, and went to a couple of them up there, and they really resonated with me. And when I moved down here, I wanted to get it started here too. And so I took 3 or 4 months after I moved here to find someone that I thought I could work well with on stage that would be comfortable and is a mover and shaker, and that might be a cliche, but someone who I know is maybe has strengths where I have weaknesses or vice versa. And Alita was... Scott's making this face like that's got to be a really strong person.
No, I was saying it's good choices.
Well, Lauren Brooks and Alita Bass were both interested, and Lauren helped out. She was gone for the first event, and Alita and I kind of got the ball rolling there, and she's been just an incredible co-host. And we took this format, which you're going to get a taste of today, and hopefully come see us tomorrow. But we've got 7 people, we've got a theme, we've got 7 minutes that they get to tell a personal story, and the idea is that you get a chance to hear from different people in the community that you don't necessarily hear from. They might be people that talk all the time. It might be a story you've heard a million times. It's that person's signature story, but it also might be someone that just moved to town. Like last month, we had this guy, Marcus Blankenship, who's from Alabama, and he had just moved here. He was kind of made a joke about having to teach Alaskan history, or getting to, I should say. And so it's really everybody, and we're hoping to, on that note, I guess I should say, if you'd like it to be more approachable to different sectors in our community, this is a volunteer group. So I've given a lot of credit to Alita and I, but we have a group of 5 other people that are helping us. They just roll their sleeves up and they get the work done. We're all putting in hours and hours for free. And I know that a lot of events can get some criticism, and I want to address this because I think that we tend to try and keep things super positive sometimes, especially when it starts to get dark, and let's not focus on any critical things, but not everything's awesome all the time, and people have criticisms of different events, and one you hear often is it kind of caters to more of your liberal white crowd, and we certainly get that. And to that, I would say, come join us. Come help us. Roll up your sleeves. If you see a sector that we're not responding to, we are operating with the purpose of trying to reach you. But if you feel like we're not, I mean, if you're talking about it, you're obviously interested in it. And so if you're criticizing, you're obviously interested in it. So come on and help us out. Help us get to a point where we can make it more inviting to you, too. And so now we have this group of seven great people helping us out. We're giving all our money to AWARE, and we're giving it to SAIL this year. And you are going to get a chance to hear a guy named Joe Clark,
yeah,
who spoke at the last event. And he's actually playing music for us tomorrow. So we do have live music.
And
there,
for our listeners, paint the picture of what the scene looks like. Folks, we're about to hear this clip from Joe Clark, who participated in November. What's it look like in the hall? How many folks are there? What's the atmosphere like?
Up to about 200 people, usually. I think that's a good mark. And we've got...
very generous, nice crowd, though, I might
really
add.
Supportive of people who... they're expecting something that's raw, that might, there might be hesitations, it might be hard for someone to speak. I think there's also this idea that just the really funny ones are what people want to hear. People really come ready to embrace this level of vulnerability because others are ready to expose that. And so you've got about 200 people, and they're all chattering, and it just unites people because they can talk about any particular story or element, or encouraging another person to get up. We've got cookies from the Rookery. We've got coffee from Copa. We've got an hour and a half program, and it's done at 8:30 so people can go on to other things. It's kind of a nice monthly check-in for a lot of people, too. And then you've got live music. Someone's volunteering their time, again, to play music. And we've got a microphone, and it's a pretty warm lighting. And let's hear, should we hear Joe?
Let's do it.
Okay.
Our next speaker is Joe Clark. Joseph Cole Clark is your typical bearded, bear hug loving fella who, as it turns out, is highly skilled at making inappropriate jokes, just a little more inappropriate. He would rather chase miracles than ghosts and majored in everything at Seattle University before earning a grand total of $2,200 in 2 years with the Jesuit Volunteer Corps Northwest, which brought him to Alaska. This guy is a bona fide love songwriter and lusts after forming a band called the Chiller Whales. We're lucky to have Joe here at this moment in time to tell us a story about his big, fat Roman Catholic family that really did not buy into that whole New Agey thing called birth control. Aptly, Joe aims to be a sex therapist when he grows up. No, really, he does. Here's Joe.
So I have these memories. One specifically, I was of us sitting around the table, like with our hands clasped, and we all have our eyes closed, and we're saying grace before dinner. And we start to get toward the end of grace, and all the kids are just like opening our eyes, looking at everyone else, trying to sneak a peek at the food in front of us, or who's gonna get the good ones, like who's looking at that big fat juicy pork chop, because it's pork chop night, and the Clark family does not mess around when it was pork chop night. You know, and we would get to the amen, and it would be like, okay, amen. And it's like, you know, we go. The amen every night marks the beginning of the daily occurrence of the Clark family Hunger Games, I felt like. And I, you know, I have a huge family. Marcus, I think you can relate to this. So there are actually 9 of us from the same parents. There's Jake, Becky, Mike, Marie, Ellie, Nate, me, Emily, and John. Such great names, right? I think we win the award for, like, the most unique names. And with a surname like Clark. Yeah. Yeah. And we were really Catholic growing up. And I mean, like, really Catholic. We only went to Latin Mass. I have these memories of us huddled around a candle at night, praying the rosary together. And, you know, we never talked about sex growing up. That was a big thing. And families that don't talk about sex, you know what happens, right? Like, everyone has sex. I'm telling you, if you have a family and you don't talk about sex, please do it. Right now I'm going on 15 nieces and nephews. I'm not even kidding. And that's real. Like, in a lot of ways, this should be my natural environment. But I look back at this gigantic cross, and I just, like, get PTSD about it. Like, it strikes the fear of the Lord in my heart. I'm not Catholic anymore. I'm not religious. I went and tried to tell that to my mom, and the conversation went a little bit like this. Yes, you are. you're baptized. You can't un-Catholic yourself. I was like, okay. Now I need to figure out how to tell her I want to be a sex therapist. But these things are recorded, right? Hey, Mom. You know, having a huge family, though, is awesome in a lot of ways. We had, like, this built-in team. We would go and play wiffle ball or kickball in the neighborhood, and it would always be the other neighbor kids versus the Clarks. We all went to the same high school, lived in the same house growing up, had a lot of the same teachers, even though there was a 20-year gap between Jake and John. And, you know, actually, a funny tangent, of all the nine siblings, five are married. Congratulations to them, right? All of those five are married to their high school sweethearts, which, you know, that's not that weird, but when everyone is married to their high school sweetheart, yeah, I've tried to psychoanalyze the shit out of that one. But good luck if you want to try. You know, everything was peaches and creams until it came to dinner night. When the pork chops were on the table, everyone was for themselves. You know, if you don't have your own back, you got nothing. And we would fight over the dumbest things. Number one, the biggest one, was sitting next to Mom, the golden seat. Who's going to sit next to Mom? I don't know why. Like, why was that such a big deal? And poor Dad. Like, he would get home frazzled, and he was jumping around job to job. He would come home working a super long day from, like, the paper mill he worked when I was younger, and he would just be grumpy and already just terrified from his day, and he would come home, and we had just terrorized the house, melted crayons into our space heater. That was my favorite. And then he would have to sit around dinner, and we would just only want to sit next to Mom. I feel bad for him. We would fight over, you know, you had to finish all your food. And so that was fine until vegetables were involved. Am I right? Like, and vegetables were involved every night. So we would have to figure out the most devious ways to get rid of our vegetables. And I have this memory of this table that had slats. And there were little, like, gaps between the slats. And we would just unabashedly shove food into those slats, and it just got really nasty. I was talking to my sister Ellie, and she said that she has this memory of looking into those slats one time, and there were actual maggots. So. Yeah, that happened. You know, and dinner would usually end. Actually, one time I remember, this is great, I got so mad at my brother Nate for taking something off my plate that I hurled a fork at his head as hard as I could. I just threw it as hard as I could, and it hit him in the face. And, you know, this is normal stuff, and I feel like, good thing it didn't get him in the eye or something. And dinner would usually end with Dad slamming his fist on the table, just, like, pleading to the heavens, please shut up! I'm sure that's exactly what he was thinking. And then the big rivalry at the end was who is going to be the poor soul stuck with dishes. And so we would always use other chores as manipulation. I swept earlier, so I don't have to do the dishes. That was a big thing. You know, we fought so much and pulled our hair and shot BB guns at each other in the forehead and spit wads everywhere and tied our sister to the tree instead of having to babysit her. Like, these are all normal things. Growing up, and just terrorizing. But I was thinking back on it, and I got to talk to all my siblings the last couple days. I learned I was going to do this talk like a couple days ago. I got a text from Alita. She's like, can you do this? I was like, yeah. I was thinking about it after talking to them, and, you know, I didn't realize how important those days were to me and how important that chaos and the insane loudness that was every single day. You know, we had so much. And one, we had a family who's together, parents who were always together. We had this group of people to share that time and have that food and sit around and terrorize our dad. And I was really thankful for that. And I don't think I would trade it for anything. So that's it.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, December 8th. In the studio right now is Amanda Compton of Mudrooms, and we just heard a piece from the November, what was that, November 12th show called Sibling Rivalry from Joe Clark there.
That was Joe. He's going to be playing music at our event tomorrow. So our next event, if you like that, and that was kind of more of a vignette. Sometimes we have full stories. We have seven people who are going to be showing up tomorrow with Joe, who will be playing music to talk about a story on accidents happen. And we're starting to ask people to give us a couple sentences about their story so we know that they're thinking about it. And I can assure you, this is one you don't want to miss. I've heard one of the stories firsthand in a hot tub by Libby Bacalar. She's going to be talking about a pretty traumatic event, and I would highly recommend coming. She's one of the speakers tomorrow. We also have Bill Dillon. We have Crystal Dooley. She is a friend visiting from town. Seth Smith, who will be speaking. Michael Orr, Paul DeSlover, longtime Juneau resident, and Maya Wolf has been here for about a year. She's definitely involved and around. So if you'd like to hear any of them speak, come on over at the Northern Light United Church, 7 p.m. And if you'd like to sign up, we've got three more spots for the rest of the season as far as storytellers go. We've got one in February. I'm sorry, we have two in February, and that's in January. That theme is rearview mirror, and we do have room for a veteran speaker. And then we have, I misspoke earlier, we have three spots left in April's event, First Job, Worst Job. There's more at mudrooms.org.
Absolutely. Amanda Compton, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you, Scott.
See you tomorrow night, 7 p.m., Northern Light Church.
And here is the writer's almanac for Monday, the 8th of December, 2014. It's the birthday of the man who said humor is emotional chaos remembered in tranquility. James Thurber, born in Columbus, Ohio, 1894, remembered today for his stories such as The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, came out in 1944 in The New Yorker, the story of a henpecked husband who fantasizes about a life of daring adventure. He started submitting pieces to The New Yorker in 1926, and they kept coming back. He said, "My pieces came back so fast, I began to think The New Yorker must have a rejection machine." But it caught on, joined the staff, and he was assigned to an office with E.B. White. They became friends, and they wrote a book together entitled Is Sex Necessary? It's the birthday of the poet and short story author Delmore Schwartz, born in Brooklyn, 1913. Studied philosophy, wanted to become a poet. One summer, when he was in college, he locked himself in his apartment for a month, and he wrote a short story called In Dreams Begin Responsibilities. It was published in the Partisan Review, and it made Delmore Schwartz famous. The story was based on Schwartz's own life. He sits watching his parents' courtship unfold on a movie screen. And when his father proposes marriage, the author begs them to reconsider, to not marry and have children. Delmore Schwartz, who was one of the most promising writers of his generation, fell into the abyss of alcohol and mental illness, died of a heart attack in 1966, and nobody claimed his body for 3 days. It's the birthday of Bill Bryson, born Des Moines in 1951, author of books about travel and language, Shakespeare, history, and science. Bill Bryson, who's described himself as a cheerleader for science. He said, "Science has been quite embattled. It's the most important thing there is. An arts graduate is not going to fix global warming. They may do other valuable things, but they are not going to fix the planet or cure cancer or get rid of malaria." And it was on this date in 1660, a professional female actress appeared on the English stage in a production of Othello, one of the earliest known instances of a female role actually being played by a woman. Women were considered too fine, too sensitive for the rough life of the theater. And so the people who came to this performance of Othello, 1660, were handed a disclaimer telling them that they would see a woman on stage, that men are just too big and burly to play these roles. It said, "With bones so large and nerves so uncompliant, when you call Desdemona, enter giant." Here's a poem for today by Emily Dickinson, just 8 lines. Exultation is the going. Exultation is the going of an inland soul to see, past the houses, past the headlands, into deep eternity. Bred as we among the mountains, can the sailor understand the divine intoxication of the first league out from land? Emily Dickinson's poem, Exultation is the Going. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity, introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving to calculate baseline scores. Learn more at lumosity.com. And by Arizona State University, with more than 70 campus degrees now available 100% online at online.asu.edu. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's about 26 minutes after the hour. You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on KTOO-FM. In the studio with me now is Brenda Wright. She's part of the Juno Audubon Society and here to talk about the Alaska Bird Conference. Welcome, Brenda.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
It's nice to have you. So the Alaska Bird Conference, does it start tomorrow?
It does. It's a scientific meeting. So we have 2 full days of scientific presentations, but tomorrow is what they call side meetings, which means there's some groups that meet only every other year, just like the Bird Conference. And they're meeting here to have their business meeting, like Boreal Partners in Flight, Alaska Raptors, and the Shorebird Group.
Okay. And this is the 16th annual Alaska Bird Conference, but you were telling me it hasn't been in Juneau for a while. Is that right?
No, that's correct. The last time it was here in 2008, even though it's only held every other year, it's been a long time since it's been here in Juneau. It moves around the state, but it's really great to have it back in Juneau so that people here in town can enjoy it too.
Yeah, and speaking of folks here in town enjoying it, tell us about the keynote speaker. I understand it's going to be a free talk, that portion of the conference.
Yes, I'm really looking forward to it. Garrett Vinn is our keynote speaker, and at 8 p.m. in Centennial Hall in Ballroom 2, he's going to give a free public lecture. He's an amazing photographer and a videographer. He travels all around the world writing articles for National Audubon Magazine, Cornell Lab of Ornithology, and he's just an excellent photographer. I'm sure people will really enjoy it. This is totally free, this public lecture.
And so you said 8 p.m. in Ballroom 2. Was that which night was that?
On Thursday night.
Thursday night, okay.
December 11th.
Okay.
And it's very convenient for us in Juneau because our free public meetings are every second Thursday of the month.
All right.
And it just falls on our day.
Perfect.
So we're really looking forward to this. But, of course, every second Thursday, January through April, we'll also be having meetings at Centennial Hall at 7 p.m.
Okay. So you have been associated, I think, with Juneau Audubon for a while. You're a past president,
mm-hmm.
among other things. Tell me a little bit about why you love birding.
Boy, that's a really good question. I didn't get glasses until I was actually a little bit older as a child, and so I wasn't really thrilled by birds, you know. But once I got to see how pretty they were, I was always just enjoyed seeing them. And I kind of gave up on them for a little while because they fly away from you, and it's hard to get to see them. But if you persevere, you get to see some really interesting behavior of the critters that live around us all year round, which I really admire, the ones that stay with us all winter, and then all the wonderful ones that show up in the summer and spring.
Yeah, and, you know, we were talking a little bit before the interview, Brenda, about Garrett. He's one of these wildlife photographers that gets down in the mud
Oh, yes.
Right?
He's done some amazing work with a spoonbill sandpiper, which is very, very rare. He's a very tall person himself, but these birds are only like 7 inches high, and they live in these huge tide flats that might go on for miles. So the pictures of him lying in the mud, oozing across the mud on his belly to take these wonderful photographers and film of these tiny sandpipers is amazing. And that actually brings to mind one of the papers that's going to be the scientific papers some people around here might be interested in, because local people here in Juneau went to Yakutat and with the help of people there radio tagged some Aleutian terns, and they followed them to where they migrated in the winter. And they went even farther than our whales. You know how the whales go right to Maui and have a wonderful winter? Well, these guys went to Malaysia.
Wow.
And so it'll be very interesting to understand more about the birds that travel so far to get here.
Okay. And tell us a little bit more about the Juneau Audubon Society. I understand this is a big deal for you, this event, the Alaska Bird Conference. What are some other ways that you all spend your time throughout the year?
Well, we do offer the public lectures all winter, and in April we begin with our migratory bird walks. Those are also free. They're held every Saturday, most April, starting in mid-April through mid-June, and anybody's welcome to come. We have binoculars to help you learn at birders of any type, beginners or professionals. We have scopes and binoculars to share and people to help you learn the birds. And then after that, by big migration pushes over, we have what we call Saturday Wild, where we do a low tide walk or identify mushrooms, go up above the tram and look at alpine flowers. And then again in the fall, we start our public lectures again.
I would say for the most part, as hobbies go, this is probably one of the more inexpensive hobbies. Would you say so?
Yeah. You know, once you've got your really nice set of waterproof binoculars for Juneau, you're all set to go out any time of the year. This time of year, it's not so you don't have to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to go hear the bird songs, because there aren't too many singing, but it's not light till 9. And, you know, coming up just this next Sunday on the 14th is our Christmas bird count. And we really appreciate people showing up to help out with that, because we really like to have a good bird count and beat Kodiak. They always beat us.
Speaking of birds and bird counting, what are some birds we should be looking for around in the community right now?
Well, you know, this is a really fun time because, you know, all the ones that are here for the summer and the insects are all gone. But the ones that live with us all winter, especially the shorebirds, the sea ducks, they're all coming back, and you can see them everywhere, like out at Auk Rec and on the Dyke Trail and just anywhere, and especially in Douglas Shoreline. All the birds that spend the summer someplace else nesting and are back to visit with us again for the winter.
Okay. And if you would like to learn more, you could probably see Brenda at the Alaska Bird Conference Tuesday through Thursday. That free talk by Garrett Vinn is on Thursday night. Is that correct?
At 8 p.m. at Centennial Hall.
And if somebody wants to learn more about the Juneau Audubon Society in general, how should they do that?
Well, we do have a webpage, Juneau Audubon Society, and there is a webpage with the entire agenda for the conference also. It's called the 2014 Alaska Bird Conference, and the agenda and all the information for registration is right there.
Sounds good. Brenda, are we missing anything? Anything you want to add?
No, but thank you so much for letting me come on.
You're welcome, Brenda. Here is Bird Note.
The sounds of spring, but in the depths of winter. This is Bird Note. You associate most birds' songs with spring and early summer if you live in a temperate climate. Birds like the song sparrow and the northern cardinal. But quite a few birds that don't migrate will keep singing, even just a little bit, right through the coldest time of the year. These winter singers are mostly asserting ownership of feeding territories, the same patches of habitat they fought for with much more intense bouts of singing earlier in the fall. Meanwhile, as early as late January, some resident birds are beginning their spring singing, especially in the southern states, like this northern mockingbird. Even as far north as British Columbia, Pacific wrens are singing in earnest by mid-February. so the singing season never entirely stops. When you step outside on a particularly sunny day this winter, even visitors from the far north, like this fox sparrow, may be warming up for the coming spring. Today's Bird Note is brought to you by the Bobolink Foundation.
Thank you for quitting smoking. It's hard to do, but smoking can kill you, so quitting saved your life. I'm so lucky to have parents like you and Dad. Other parents would probably say, oh, he's just a kid. Love, Nick.
My kids inspired me to quit. Find your reason to quit smoking.
Call Alaska Tobacco Quit Line, free for all Alaskans, at 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
This message is brought to you by Search, your partner in health.
It's about 37 after the hour. You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on KTOO-FM. Scott Burton, your host, and with me now in the studio, Lauren Anderson. Welcome, Lauren.
Hi, Scott.
And you're the Director of Activities Manager.
Treadwell Arena Manager.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, welcome. Welcome. So let's see. Last time we spoke, we were talking about Skate with Santa and the turkey bowling. Can you tell us how those went?
Sure. Our turkey bowling was the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, and it's our annual event where you bowl a turkey down the ice, and you must have ice skates on. And we had a good turnout and a lot of excitement, and the disco ball was going, and everyone had a really great time.
Yeah.
We had about, 30 or so folks, and we're always hoping for more. And every year it varies depending on weather or different things. But the people that were there had a fantastic time. And then our Santa skate was the day after Thanksgiving, and that ended up being a free event and was very successful. We had a lot of skaters, and Santa was there and with elves and the Juno Douglas High School hockey team. There were some representatives from there, so we had a really great turnout from our community and partners and the Douglas Fourth of July Committee, and we had over 100 of skaters out there. So it was really great to have so many folks skating and having so much fun.
I'll bet. Sounds like a busy time at the arena.
Yeah, it is. This time of year, people do like to skate in the winter and over the holidays, and so we have a variety of open skates over the holiday season that are added to our schedule.
Yeah, tell us about those open skates.
Well, we have just our regular open skates Monday, Wednesday, Friday from 12:15 to 2, and then Tuesdays and Thursdays 2:30 to 4 o'clock, and a Wednesday open skate in the evening from 6:30 to 8 o'clock, and some of our Fridays and Saturdays when we don't have high school games, we do have some open skates. And, of course, on the weekends we have our Saturday –
and Sunday afternoon skates. So you can always check out our website for the details.
And do you rent skates there at the arena?
We do. It's $2.25 to rent skates. And we have figure skates and hockey skates available. So we hope you can come out and skate with us.
And how much does it cost for a person to join an open skate besides the rental if they need that?
It's $6 for an adult and $5 for a youth. But we also have a family rate, and that's $25, and that's for two adults and up to four youth, and all skates are included. We also have helmets, which are complimentary.
I was just thinking about that.
Yeah.
That sounds like a good choice.
Yeah.
Healthy choice.
So we have some options for people.
All right. What else you got going on?
We have some special events coming up with some of our partners and special programs. And last week we had all of Gastineau Elementary with our Skating with the Schools program, and we're always trying to get more classes to come and come skating at the rink. We do a 15-minute skating lesson, and then they have some time to practice what they learn, and then the last 15 minutes we put on our disco ball, and they have some time to dance under the disco ball. Usually teachers bring two classes, and it can be sometimes it's the reader buddy, sometimes it's just another class of the same grade, and hours are usually during the morning between 8:30 and noon. And so we're always hoping for classes to come from all over the school district. And it can be elementary, middle, high school, alternative, homeschool. It's open to anyone who would like to bring their classes, and it's Skating with the Schools.
Okay.
Oh, that's also $105 for the class.
Okay.
And that includes everything.
Okay.
We also have a new program. It's Adaptive Skating, and this is with ORCA, and it starts on Wednesday, and it'll be for 5 weeks, and it's on Wednesdays from 11 o'clock to 12 o'clock. And I approached Tristan this summer, and we talked about the possibility of doing an Adaptive Skating program, and I had let him know that there was a grant from USA Hockey to start up a program, and so ORCA went for it, and they received the funds have this program. So we're really excited. We're not sure how many people will be there on Wednesday, what really to expect, but we're really excited, and I think it's going to be a very positive experience for everybody out on the ice or for those watching.
I bet.
Yeah.
I bet. What else you got going on?
We also received some gear from USA Hockey, and it's adult first goals program, and we're going to be doing an intro to hockey, introducing people and providing gear for free, and those dates are not scheduled yet, but they will be over the holiday, and we'll have a variety, and it can be a drop-in. So check out our website or give us a call if you're interested and want to know more about it. We will be getting that information out soon.
Okay. You know, you probably see a lot of folks skating, a lot of families come in over there. Lauren, what would you say is sort of the common denominator? What do they enjoy about it most?
You know, it's a family activity,
mm-hmm.
So it's something you can do all together. And it doesn't matter your ability. It's just being out there on the ice and being able to experience something new. If it's your first time, or for those that are more experienced, it's just something you can do as a family, and we get a lot of adults that play hockey, and they introduce their children to hockey or skating, or youth that want to skate with their parents, and they get their parents out there. We have our Parent and Top program, too, which I wanted to take a minute to talk about, and that's every other Sunday, and it'll be this Sunday, and it's for youth 5 and under and a parent, and we do a little skating lesson. That's $15. It's just drop-in. And we play with bean bags. It's just all about just being out on the ice. And I think for families, that's what it's all about, is just getting out there and experiencing that freedom that you have on the ice that you might not have anywhere else.
Sure. And thinking about somebody who has never skated before, I'm sure you've seen some of those folks come in. How long does it take them until they get comfortable on skates?
I think 3 or 4 visits. Really.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not taking a lesson, it might take a little bit longer. But if you have a little instruction just to go over the basics, and that's kind of what we do with our parent and taught time. It's not only a time for teaching a child, but we also give parents the skills take their child out during an open skate time and give them the confidence to get out there and practice. I think 3 or 4 times is really what is good for someone, and you got to stick with it. Trying new things can be pretty challenging, especially on a hard surface like the rink.
Well, it seems like the right time to do it. The ski area, we don't have a ton of snow yet, and a lot of the trails, are iffy. Great time to go in and do some skating for
Absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely, and it's bright, and we always have the music going, and it's contained. So if you have children, you have that space where it's safe and fun and something new is always exciting, or something that's good exercise if it's something that you know how to do.
Okay. If somebody wants more information, what should they do, Lauren?
I recommend Googling Treadwell Arena.
Okay.
Or you can always go to www.juno.org/parksrec/ice rink. You can call us at 586-0410 or just stop by. This Sunday we have the Juno Skating Club's annual holiday show. So if you're not a skater, you can come and watch others skate and experience it through them. And that's from 2:30 to 3:30 on Sunday. So there are all sorts of opportunities at Treadwell Arena for all different abilities and ages. And we hope you can come and skate with us.
Great, Lauren. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
Here is a tune from Marion Call, who's going to be playing Thursday, December 18th at 360 at 7 p.m. More about that in a couple minutes.
on my own terms lately. Who's to say we're upside down? Who's to say we're falling if we miss the ground? Who's to say we're going nowhere if we like spinning around and round?
Good Morning Moon by Marion Call. She will be playing next Thursday, the 18th, next Thursday, at 360 downstairs in our performance space. Concert not to be missed. Tickets are available at krnn.org, kto.org. Would love to see you there. In the meantime, on the phone with me right now is Justin Rose from the Governor's Mansion. Justin, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you doing today?
I am doing great, and we're going to be talking about the open house tomorrow night. How's preparations going?
You know, it's going really well. We've been busy today getting the cookies dropped off and all the fudge and candy and getting the house all set up for the large amount of people we're going to have through here.
And tell us what your job is there, Justin.
I'm the assistant manager here at the house. We take care of the house and the family living in it. So we're really happy to have Governor Walker's family here, and it's been a really great experience.
Okay, and what can we expect tomorrow night, Justin?
You can expect to come through, get a lot of great cookies. We've ordered over 25,000 cookies for this event. I know, so the kids should have plenty to eat. They might not sleep, but it'll be a really good event. We're going to have hot cider. And it'll just be a really great chance for the community to come out and meet Governor Walker and Lieutenant Governor Millott.
Okay. And you were telling me earlier this has been going on since 1913 or something like that?
Yeah. And so actually this year is the 100th open house, because during World War II, we missed two of the open houses. But upon completion of the house in 1913, we held the first open house here. Well, I wasn't here then. But ever since, you know, they've had an open house for the community to come in, meet the governor. And so we're happy to have the 100th open house this year.
Okay, and what's timing like tomorrow night, Justin?
Well, the main open house is going to be from 3 to 6 p.m. And if you have mobility issues or if there's anyone that doesn't feel like they could make it through the house under the normal circumstances, We have the time set aside from 2:30 to 3 o'clock that we'll be able to accept those people through the line to get them in and out through the house without the big line or the issue of mobility needs and concerns.
All right. So 2:30 to 3 for accessibility, anyone who needs help. And then from 3 to 6 p.m. For the general public, it sounds like?
Yeah, and we have all kinds of performers lined up from the charter school, to Auk Bay, Floyd Dryden, and both high schools. And so we're going to have a number of different performers in the house throughout those times, and so it's going to be a really great experience.
All right, sounds like a lot of fun, Justin. 25,000 cookies. You guys have a lot of eating to do, right?
Thankfully, we don't have to eat them all, and we'll hope that Santa takes care of the rest.
Great, Justin. Anything else you'd like to add?
We hope to see you out here, and we know it's going to be a great night.
All right, Justin Rose, thank you for your time.
Hey, thank you.
Tuning into a Juno afternoon today. Tomorrow, Ken Fix will be your host, and he'll talk with Rebecca Souza about Saturday's Juno Robot Jamboree. We'll get a preview of Thursday's Juno Student Symphony. We'll get the details about Sunday's Harlem Ambassadors basketball game, and we'll learn about upcoming special events in the school lunch program with guest food services manager Adrienne Schwartz, that Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more tomorrow on a Juno afternoon.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juno, KTOO is on GCI Cable, on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
For the weather currently, it's 47 at the Juno Federal Building, 33 at the Juneau Weather Office there on the back loop, 36 at the airport, and the forecast. Tuesday, rain, highs around 43, east winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. Wednesday, mostly cloudy, chance of rain, highs around 40, east wind 10 to 20 miles per hour. And Thursday, mostly cloudy, chance of rain, lows 33 to 39, highs around 39, getting a little cooler. Friday, rain likely, highs dropping to around 38.